This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Jonathan Rentels is the founder and the executive director of Creative Voices in Media. You can learn more online at creativevoices.us. He joins us periodically on this program to keep us apprised of media issues. How are you, sir? It's good to see you.
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here, Coy.
Let's get right into it. Wardrobe malfunctions, dirty talk. Give us the backstory. And then, of course, the big news recently with the announcement of the what's going on with the Supreme Court and this whole mess.
Right. Well, the big news, to cut to that first, is that the Supreme Court decided a few days ago to uphold the FCC and allow Fox to be fined for fleeting expletives, the S word and the F word, which were said by Cher and Nicole Richie on the American Music Awards show maybe 5 years ago now. And this has, we're a party to this case, so we lost, which is a little bit painful to say, but I think there's...
So Fox had appealed the ruling of a...
Ruling of the Federal Communications Commission, which had been and has been on a fierce crusade really against indecent content, in many ways pushed by conservative lobbying groups like the Parents Television Council and the American Family Association and so on. The two most recent commissioners of the Federal Communications Commission, Michael Powell and Kevin Martin, had both made this kind of a personal priority and really politicized, we feel, the enforcement of rules governing content on broadcast television. So Fox lost at the FCC. They were fined a lot of money. They appealed to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York, where they won. The FCC was overturned. The FCC then appealed that decision to the Supreme Court, which last week overruled the Second Circuit, upheld the FCC, and has sent it back to the Second Circuit now for further proceedings. And the thick plottens here in that the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction case, for which the FCC fined CBS, and that was the case where Janet Jackson's breast was exposed for, I believe, a 16th of a second during the 2004 Super Bowl halftime. CBS appealed that fine, which was gargantuan, from the FCC. And they won that in the Third Circuit. The FCC appealed that to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court just a couple days ago, after ruling in the Fox case, threw that one back to the Third Circuit and said, you guys better think this over again based on our ruling in the Fox case.
So in both cases, the Supreme Court came down on the side of the FCC fining these media outlets and basically censoring them.
Correct. And the decisions were not based on the merits of what the FCC did, supposedly. They were based on a very narrow ruling in terms of legal process, which is how much leeway does a court of appeals or a court have to overturn the decision of an administrative agency like the Federal Communications Commission. The courts of appeal said, we have considerable leeway in this case because the FCC from out of nowhere changed its policy on these issues, which enabled them to levy these fines. The Supreme Court said, well, we don't think it was so out of nowhere as you say it was, and we think everyone should defer to the Federal Communications Commission.
Now, so the real issue for the U.S. Supreme Court and for the appellate court wasn't so much the indecency, what is this indecent,
or correct,
did her bosom upset children or whatever.
Correct.
It was, can a court oversee the actions of the FCC in this way?
That's right. Can a court say, FCC, your process is flawed? I mean, and how much leeway does a court have to say that? Now, all the merits of the case were, of course, argued within that, and it all gets
the
mixed
indecencies
up.
Subject,
right.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court even said, you know, while we say here that you, Creative Voices, Fox, all the broadcast networks and so on, lose this case, we will allow you and encourage you to bring up the First Amendment constitutional issues about censorship in the Court of Appeals, which the Court of Appeals had avoided because they said, well, we can just determine this on the basis of the FCC didn't even follow its own rules. Well, now the Supreme Court has said, okay, the FCC did follow its own rules, but we're not so sure about the constitutionality of this. So let's have a trial.
So now it's a totally different trial.
Let's have hearings in the courts of appeal on whether this entire process of allowing the FCC to censor content on broadcast television is indeed constitutional in this day and age.
So the new trial actually gets to the real heart of the matter, not so much court oversight of the FCC.
That's right.
But FCC oversight of what some perceive as indecency.
That's exactly right. Now we'll get to the merits, and now we'll talk about whether this is censorship that is consistent with the First Amendment.
Interesting. We're talking with Jonathan Rentels of Creative Voices in Media. So what's the timeline on this process? How does it go from here? And what's your take on how it's going to go?
Well, this could really be termed the lawyer stimulus package, because this is just going to go on and on. This is probably going to take another year to get in front of the courts of appeal.
Oh, my gosh.
Then they're going to take, you know, their several months to make their decision, which will inevitably, no matter what they decide, be appealed to the Supreme Court, which will take another year to hear the case and another several months to issue their decision. So it could well be 10 years after the incident when this will finally, you know, the incidents, the Janet Jackson and the Cher and Nicole Richie on the American Music Awards, before this is actually settled once and for all.
Amazing. That only in America, you know? My gosh.
The wheels turn slowly.
So what is the argument that you have been making in I'm imagining the amicus briefs that you have filed. What's the argument that you've been making?
Well, technically, first of all, we weren't an amicus. We were an actual party in the case alongside Fox. And the points we make are, A, that the FCC decision was political. It reversed its decisions and all its precedents. There was, you know, not enough notice. They didn't do any kind of background research as to the impact that they were claiming this had on children, the horrific impact. And if you go above and beyond that, there are real clear constitutional questions. Now, all these courts prefer not to reach the constitutional questions if there are other ways that they can, you know, rule on a case.
Just because it's such a hot potato.
Exactly.
When you start talking the First Amendment.
Yeah, you don't want to get to the constitutional if you can deal with sort of the administrative, the regulatory, the legal, the statutory, all those things prior to reaching the ultimate constitutional issue. So everybody's treading lightly sort of on the constitutional issue. And there are other reasons that this is an interesting posture of the case, because suddenly another thing that regulation does, which we are in favor of from the FCC, is it limits the concentration of media. The FCC has rules about how many television stations each network or any one owner can own, how many radio stations, whether they can own a newspaper and a television station and radio stations in the same market, and all those things. And we like those regulations because they limit, although those have been deregulated over the years, they limit media ownership so that one owner, whether he's liberal or conservative or, you know, just a large corporation, can't own it all. So there are certain reasons why we want regulation by the FCC. We think there are certain benefits. But when it comes to the content of speech, that's such a clear First Amendment issue. That we make a differentiation. We say that's unconstitutional. But, you know, the media companies say, well, if you limit how many radio stations we can own, that's limiting our speech. That's a violation of our freedom of expression. Well, we say, no, we make a distinction on that. So we're in an interesting position here.
Yeah. It's amazing. And it's something that the founding fathers could never have foreseen.
No.
One company owning, having this type of control over the media, local media, that reaches millions and millions of people.
Well, that's right. And we argue that there's a very clear connection between what happened in terms of indecency and the concentration of ownership in the last 10 years of media.
Explain that.
Well, in 1996, the Telecommunications Act was passed, which lifted the limits on how many radio and television stations any one owner could own nationwide. What happened was companies started to buy up stations all over the country, including here in Charlottesville. And
that's when we saw Clear Channel, for example,
Clear
really
Channel
take
came
off.
In. You know, other big companies consolidated. And the television networks, Fox and CBS and NBC, were particularly aggressive about buying up local affiliates. What happened then was, particularly in radio, Howard Stern was a huge radio star at that time in urban markets, mostly in the north. He then, because the owners, including Infinity, which became Viacom, Mel Karmazin, and so on, which owned the Howard Stern show, they pushed that onto all the new stations that they owned into small, you know, town markets and also throughout the South, which has a different, you know, in many ways, kind of sensibility about a lot of things Howard Stern likes to talk about.
Yeah.
So suddenly, these communities, which had not had the benefit of Howard Stern on the airways, if you call it a benefit,
right.
They did not call it a benefit, and they got organized, and they said, this is pushing indecency into our community. Well, the problem was they lost their local ownership. They didn't have a local owner who said, you know, this isn't working for us. Howard Stern, you may be great in New York, but you may not be great in Charlottesville, or you may not be great in Sarasota, Florida, or, you know, other communities. And the same was true with some really awful content. I don't defend this content, but
yeah.
You know, a guy like Bubba the Love Sponge was suddenly...
I have heard him, yeah.
...syndicated on a lot of, you know, and Man Cow out of Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly...
Opie and Anthony. And
yeah. Yep. And so that opened the issue of indecency because suddenly... This content that was so objectionable to people in these small towns was in their small towns.
Right.
You know.
And it was in their small towns because of the changes in the media laws, which allowed one company
absolutely
to put this stuff everywhere.
To own stations, to go into smaller and smaller markets and push this content into smaller and smaller markets where people got really upset.
And then they fought back.
They fought back. They organized. It was completely their right. They filed complaints with the FCC.
And all of that stuff is on satellite radio.
That's right, and on the internet.
Yeah. Now.
But the broadcast airwaves are regulated, are, you know, by the FCC as public property, spectrum. And so they are subject to indecency regulation. And this then was seized on, and Michael Powell famously, as the chairman of the FCC, went to war with Howard Stern and fined him and found more ways to fine him. And Howard Stern didn't, you know, cut back at all. You know, he took it right on. And so then Congress raised the fines for indecency tenfold per station. And then Janet Jackson happened. And it became the whole issue of the content of broadcast radio and television, which has always been a very sensitive topic. You know, a lot of people don't feel it's appropriate for their families.
Right, right.
Whereas other people think it's fine or, you know, bring it on. It became a kind of wedge issue. It was politicized. It became part of presidential campaigns. And so that's where we are now.
It's still not resolved, and it's become a huge hot potato.
It's become a huge hot potato.
That people use against each other politically.
That's correct.
We're talking with Jonathan Rentels of Creative Voices in Media. As you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking that we've come a long way from the day when advertisers were your censors. The right. Advertisers would come in and say, yeah, I'll sponsor this show, but here's my assistant, and he's going to be here as you're rehearsing this radio or television show, and he's going to censor you.
Well, it's interesting. Advertisers... at least in my experience, didn't play that role as heavily as local affiliate owners. They, especially in television, for example, said, you know, this NYPD Blue that's coming on in 1990 or 91,
yeah,
that just doesn't work in
our
market.
Had a naked guy, right?
It did in year two or three, but yeah. Well, actually, it may have on the very first show. That's a very interesting. Yeah, but anyway, a lot of local stations didn't carry it. Well, guess what? In the, 10 years later, those local stations weren't owned by local owners anymore. So there was nobody to say no, and nobody to say to the network, you know, fellas, you may not want to, you know, just continually kind of increase the raciness aspect of television. You know, we got families that we're trying to, you know, sell products to and have watch our programs.
Right, right. Jonathan Rentels with Creative Voices in Media. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, let's talk about broadband and television. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Well, my mom loved me. We're talking with Jonathan Rentels of Creative Voices in Media, online at creativevoices.us. Now, tell us how broadband fits into this whole, what is broadband and how does it fit into this whole discussion?
Well, broadband is a fast access to the internet, many times faster than what we originally had, which was dial-up through the old telephone lines. And broadband can now really bring video quality, television quality video through people's, into people's computers. And so this is something we're working on in terms of extending broadband access to the internet out to everyone, just as telephone service is out to everyone, because broadband is the communications medium of the digital age of the 21st century. And not only is it the communications medium of the 21st century, but it will also be, for many people, the video delivery system of the 21st century. And how does that fit into what we were talking about in terms of indecency on television? Well, today, if you have a good quality broadband connection to the internet, you can essentially program your own television channel. You don't have to rely on what NBC wants to show you at 9 o'clock. You can choose from NBC.com or Hulu.com or YouTube or TV.com, which is CBS's website, to watch the shows you want to watch when you want to watch them with very few commercial interruptions. And it enables creators, who we represent, as well as consumers, who we also represent, to avoid this whole issue of what's appropriate for my family versus what's appropriate for someone else's family that's being made, the decision that's being made in some, you know, boardroom at a network or in an administrative office behind closed doors by unelected bureaucrats or by pressure groups to whom you, whose views you may not subscribe. You choose for yourself what you want to watch. If you want to watch Disney all the time, well, they just signed up with Hulu. They're going to put all their shows on Hulu, or you could download them from iTunes. Disney has been on iTunes for a long time.
Yeah.
So you don't have to even subscribe to cable or satellite or even watch broadcast television.
So that local control, which used to be at your local TV station, that disappeared with media ownership gobbling up everything post-1996. But now with broadband, we're seeing that local control is in your own home.
That's correct. The broadband internet really enables every person who has access to it individualized control. You decide exactly what's best for you.
Right, right. Well, I will say I'm one of those people because I got rid of our satellite years ago. And for two reasons. Number one, the price kept going up, and it ticked me off because it was up like $25, $30 a month over what we originally signed. And two, I found myself at 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night looking up thinking, oh my gosh, I've been sitting here for 3 hours. This has got to stop. So now if I want to watch something, I go to Hulu.com or I go to iTunes and download it. I watch exactly what I want to watch when I want to watch it.
Well, there is a movement of people called cable cutters. And they supposedly are, in fact, turning dropping their cable subscriptions and just deciding to watch TV or video on the internet. Now,
and there is so much for those who, like myself, who haven't cut it yet. You need to know there is so much television online, TV and movies online.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, what's going to happen with video, with television, to a lesser extent movies, because the, you know, going to the theater is still going to be an experience. But for television, they have real reason to be worried, because what's happened to newspapers in terms of the internet just killing the newspaper business forecast to happen to the video business and television. And it's not so much that people necessarily say, okay, I'm going to watch television on the internet. It's they go to the internet and they find all kinds of different video. They find, you know, cats skateboarding, right, you know, on YouTube, and they think that's as good as watching a sitcom on a broadcast network.
It's just a lot more options.
There's so many options.
Yeah, absolutely. Jonathan Rentels is with Creative Voices in Media. You can learn a whole lot more online at creativevoices.us. Jonathan, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Coy. Thanks.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.